The letter had arrived on Monday, slipped beneath the door of the cottage at the end of Mill Road like something meant to be found but not expected. Wren had read it twice before she understood what it said. "Would you call? It's been nearly a year, and I can't seem to find the right words. No signature. No address beyond the hand delivery." But Wren recognized the slant of the handwriting, the way the T's crossed with a hesitant lift, the loop of the Y trailing off as though the writer had forgotten what she intended to write. Maeve Collins. She had not intended to visit. She had told herself this on Tuesday morning, standing before the mirror in the parlor, adjusting the brim of her hat until it sat at the angle her father would have approved severe, practical, neither flamboyant nor neglectful. She was going to the florist for lilies. That was the lie she offered Silas at breakfast, and he had nodded without looking up from his tea, which was itself a small betrayal. He always looked up when she spoke of errands, always offered a comment, always made the ordinary feel like a negotiation. Today he had simply murmured something about the weather and returned to his cup. Perhaps he was tired. Perhaps he suspected. The walk to Bramble Lane took 25 minutes along the river road, then a turn onto a lane so narrow the hedges brushed her shoulders on either side. Oakhaven was not a large town, but Bramble Lane existed at the edge of its memory, a row of cottages that predated the mill, predated the railway, predated anything that gave the place its reason for being. The houses here belonged to people who worked the land or kept to themselves, the sort of residents who did not attend the Sunday gatherings at the chapel and did not send their children to the grammar school. Maeve Collins was one of them. Arthur had been the other. Wren paused at the gate. The iron was rusted, the hinges stiff, the little brass number plate 47 tarnished to a dull brown. She knocked. The sound was swallowed by the thick timber of the door, and she waited, shifting her weight from one foot to the other, feeling the damp of the morning seep through the soles of her shoes. She told herself she was only delivering courtesy. That was all. An anniversary check-in, nothing more. The door opened slowly, as though whoever stood behind it had decided, incrementally, that opening it was preferable to keeping it shut. Maeve Collins filled the doorway not broadly, but with a presence that made the narrow space feel crowded. She was perhaps 42, though the years had done strange things to her face, stretching some features thin while pressing others deep. Her hair was blonde, faded to something between straw and gold, pulled back from her forehead in a manner that suggested she had not considered her appearance that morning. Her eyes were blue pale, almost gray at the edges, the color of the river on a foggy day. "Wren Holloway," she said. Not a question, a recognition. "Yes, Mrs. Collins." Maeve studied her for a moment, and Wren felt the weight of that gaze like a physical pressure against her skin. Then Maeve stepped back and said, "Come in then." The cottage was warm. Not the dry warmth of a coal fire, though there was one, low and smoldering in the grate, but the damp warmth of a house that had been lived in without much ventilation. The walls were papered in a pattern of faded roses, the wallpaper peeling at the seams where the plaster had shifted over the decades. A rug covered most of the floor, worn thin in the center, and the furniture was arranged in a semicircle around the hearth, as though the room had been designed for conversation rather than comfort. There were photographs on the mantelpiece, three of them, in silver frames, and Wren recognized one immediately. Arthur, standing in front of the mill, his arms crossed, his expression stubborn even in stillness. "You didn't have to come," Maeve said, closing the door behind them and moving toward a chair by the fire. "It's only been a year. People forget these things." "I don't think they do," Wren said. That stopped Maeve. She turned, and for a moment her face was unreadable, not closed exactly, but rearranged, as though something inside her had shifted position and she was assessing the new configuration. Then she gestured to the chair opposite hers and said, "Sit, would you like tea?" "No, thank you." Maeve sat, Wren sat. The fire crackled. Somewhere upstairs, a floorboard groaned, and Wren wondered if someone else lived in the cottage, a daughter, perhaps, or a sister, but the silence that followed suggested otherwise, that the house was as empty of company as Maeve herself appeared to be. "Why did you come?" Maeve asked. The question was simple, direct, and Wren felt the lie rise to her throat like bile. She pushed it down. "I wanted to check in on the anniversary, your husband's." Maeve's mouth tightened, not quite a smile, not quite a frown, Something in between the expression of a person who had heard this particular kindness before and found it insufficient. "Arthur's anniversary," she repeated. "Yes, it's been a year." "I've been meaning to write to you," Maeve said, her thumb stilled on the rim of the cup, "but I never knew what to say." She looked down at the porcelain, at the blue cornflowers painted along the edge, and her mouth worked without producing words. The silence stretched long enough that Ren wondered if she would speak again, long enough that the fire seemed to grow louder. Then, very quietly, "There are no words for it, are there?" Ren said nothing. She had learned, over the past weeks, that silence was often more useful than speech. Let the other person fill the void. Let them reveal what they carried. Maeve set the cup down. Her hands were trembling slightly, almost imperceptibly, but Ren noticed. She had trained herself to notice these things. It was a skill her father had taught her, though not explicitly. "You watch people, Ren. You watch them the way you watch a flame steadily, without blinking, because if you look away, you miss the moment it changes." "I kept the urn," Maeve said. Ren's pulse quickened, though she kept her face still. "Of course you did. It's on the shelf in the bedroom, above the bed. I couldn't bring myself to put it anywhere else." Maeve's voice had grown softer, quieter, as though speaking the words aloud required more energy than she possessed. "For a long time, I told myself it was because I wasn't ready to let him go. That if I put the urn away, if I tucked it into a cupboard or a drawer, it would be like admitting he was really gone. But that's not why, is it?" Ren felt the room tilt, just slightly, as though the floor had shifted beneath her feet. "Why is it, Mrs. Collins?" Maeve looked at her directly then, and her eyes were wet, not with tears, exactly, but with the sheen of unshed moisture, the kind that gathered when a person had been crying for a while and then stopped, unable to produce more. "Because it's too light." The words landed in the space between them like stones dropped into still water. Ripples spread outward, invisible but undeniable. "Too light," Ren repeated. "Yes." Maeve's voice cracked on the second syllable and she swallowed hard, composing herself. I don't know how I know, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor. But I held that urn when you brought it and I held it and I thought, this is wrong. Ashes are heavier than this. Even if his body was small, even if he was thin, ashes should weigh, I don't know, more than this. She shook her head, a small, desperate gesture. I've held it every morning since. I take it down and I hold it and I put it back. It's become a kind of ritual, a ritual of not knowing. Ren's hands were clenched in her lap. She forced them open. She forced her breathing to remain steady. Inside her chest, something was moving, a cold, sharp thing, like glass being ground into smaller and smaller fragments. She had known, intellectually, that the urns might not contain what they should. She had seen the entries in the ledger, the payments for mahogany urns marked, delivered, next to names she recognized, the discrepancies that mounted like snowdrifts along the margins of her father's accounting. But knowing and hearing were two different things. Hearing was worse. Hearing made it real. "How long?" Ren said. Her voice sounded foreign to her, thin, controlled, the voice of a professional speaking to a client, not a daughter speaking to a widow. "Since the beginning," Maeve said. "The day you brought it, I should have said something then. I should have called you. I should have," she stopped. Her hands had begun to tremble more violently now, and she clasped them together to still them. "But I didn't. Because I was afraid, afraid of what it meant. Afraid of what I might have to do if it meant what I thought it meant, so I said nothing, and I held the urn, every morning, for a year." Ren recalled her father's hands broad, calloused, steady as they counted coins at the heavy oak desk, signed receipts, and closed the ledger each evening with a satisfaction that bordered on pride. She remembered the tome itself, bound in red leather, resting in the office, its pages filled with entries that told one story while the truth whispered another. She thought of Arthur Gable, standing before the mill with arms crossed and expression stubborn, and wondered if he had ever suspected. If he had known, before the end, that his body would not return to his wife, that his ashes would be replaced by something lighter, something cheaper, something purchased by the sack from the timber mill on the riverbank. "I'm sorry," Ren said. The words were inadequate, hollow, the kind of apology that acknowledged pain without offering remedy. But they were all she had. Maeve looked at her for a long time. Then, slowly, she reached out and placed her hand over Ren's. Her skin was cool, her grip surprisingly strong. "Don't be sorry," she said. "Be honest." The word hung in the air between them, heavy and absolute. Ren felt it settle into her bones, into the spaces between her ribs, into the places where guilt and grief had been coiling themselves for weeks. Honest. The word was simple, almost childish in its simplicity, but it carried a weight that no single sentence could bear alone. To be honest meant to open the ledger and show it to the town. To be honest meant to stand before the council and speak the names of the dead and the crimes of the living. To be honest meant to destroy the funeral home, to destroy her father's legacy, to destroy the fragile peace that Oak Haven had built on a foundation of silence. "I don't know what to do," Ren said. Maeve's hand tightened on hers. "Then don't decide today, just don't lie anymore. That's all I'm asking, don't lie." Outside, the wind moved through the hedges, rustling the leaves with a sound like whispered conversation. The fire continued to crackle. The photographs on the mantelpiece caught the light, their silver frames gleaming faintly. Ren sat in the chair by the hearth, holding the hand of a widow who had carried a secret for a year, and she felt the weight of everything she had not yet understood settling onto her shoulders like a shroud. When she rose to leave, Maeve did not release her hand immediately. She held on for a moment longer, as though anchoring Ren to the room, to the truth, to the small, warm cottage at the end of Bramble Lane, where the wallpaper peeled and the fire smoldered and the urn sat on a shelf above the bed, too light to be real. "Thank you for coming," Maeve said. Ren nodded, she could not speak. She pulled her hand free, turned, and walked back out into the gray afternoon, feeling the damp of the morning seep through her shoes, feeling the weight of the urn in Maeve's house, feeling the first certain thing she had known in weeks settle into her chest like a stone dropped into deep water. She would not look away from the ledger again.